All right. So, how many know what we have been talking about for the last 2 weeks? I saw Gavin's hand was up first. Perspective, that was a week one. But what is the main thing? Brain games. And the brain has a lot of intricate parts to it. And when we start to think about what happens inside of our brain, we start to feel and realize that we can turn our brain to think on one thing, or we can have our brain think totally other thing. All right? So the first week, Miss Vanessa started this series, and she spoke on perspective. And how you see something is a part of what your brain thinks. So if I'm looking right here and I'm looking at Ethan, Ethan is looking me straight in the face. He's seeing me right here. But over here, Logan is seeing a totally different type of me than what Ethan is seeing. His perspective over here is different than what the perspective over here is. Does that make sense? So we talked about that the first week. The second week, Miss Vanessa spoke, and she talked about your thoughts and how your thoughts can play tricks on you and how your brain responds to those thoughts and makes you think that either, hey, maybe you're not good enough because you're thinking that you're not good enough, or maybe you think that somebody's talking about you when they're just talking. I get that a lot. I think that when I get ready to go talk to somebody and I see them and they're like looking over my direction and they're talking, I'm like, they're talking about me. Okay, what are they saying? You know, are they mad? Did I do something? Did I offend them? Like, I start playing all these things in my brain, and what happens is I start to let my brain play tricks and play games on me. Tonight, we're going to conclude the series, and we're going to talk about a word, focus. Focus. Have you guys ever thought about the word focus before? Not the car, not the Ford Focus, but the actual Focus. Some of you are getting ready to start driving. You're like, I wish I just had a Ford Focus, because at this point, anything's better than pedaling the bike, right? Or hoofing it on those 2 feet that God gave you. God made the first car. It was called your feet. So you just walk it on out until you get that other one that has the motor in it, all right? So tonight we're going to talk about focus. And so tonight what I want to do is I want you to look at something. I'm going to play you a video, but before I play the video, how many of you have ever lost your focus in the middle of trying to do something? All right, lots of hands going up. So let's just talk about it for real right here. How many of you have ever lost your focus trying to do your homework? Okay, so the phone, all of a sudden the phone goes off, right? It's like that text message, and it's like your friend, and they're talking to you, and you're like, oh, okay, so you go to answer them back, and if you have an iPhone, like, you go to answer them back real quick and, like, put the phone down, and then you see those three little bubbles pop up, and you're like, oh, great, they're going to talk back. So I have to wait a couple minutes, right? Or this is my the one that gets you probably a lot, is all of a sudden you hear that little pling-ding. And what is it? Snapchat. Like, people are checking, like, they're sending you snaps. You're like, okay, I got to check and see what it is. You're like, huh, that was really funny. You send them back something, and then you're waiting for them to send you back something back. And 20 minutes later, you're still not doing your homework. And your parents are like, what are you doing? You're like, homework. They're like, looks like you're on your phone. You're like, I am on my phone. I got distracted, and I lost my focus. So today, I want to show you a video, and I want you to watch this video and see what happens. All right? Go ahead, Jennifer. It's not creepy.
Pay attention. This is a test. Try to count the number of footballs, like this one, as they fly across the screen. You have 10 seconds. Ready? Go. Count all 27 footballs? It's not easy. But the funny thing is, you didn't need to count any of them to get the right answer. Want to find out why? How could you possibly know the number of footballs without counting them? Because the answer was hidden in plain sight, right on the scoreboard. While you were focused on what your brain thought was important, counting the footballs, You missed some vital information.
All right, so how many people read the screen? How many people read the screen? How many people have seen this before and knew to read the screen? Okay, all y'all cheaters out there. But how many people counted footballs? How many people got 27? Okay, you got 26, got 28. Here's the thing. Listen, I want you to understand what happened. If you weren't focused on the right thing, you missed what you could have had the answer to. Okay? The answer was in front of you. Was there 27 footballs? Yes. But the answer was in front of you that said, stop counting, is what it said. It scrolled and said, stop counting. There are 27 footballs. If you didn't see it, at the end of service, we'll play it again so you can just watch just that part go through. It's crazy because I had to watch it, and I'm like, oh, I got to go back because I got to make sure it's really there, right? Sometimes people tell you, it's like, oh, that was there, and you're like, no, it wasn't, and you go reverse, you're like, I missed it. I'm one of those people that I like to watch a movie like 5 times because I watch the movie, and then what happens? I find out that I missed something that somebody else was like, did you see this in the movie? I'm like, no. Like, you missed it? I'm like, yes, where did I miss that at? So then I go back and I rewatch the movie and I find stuff. Well, then I really like to watch it. I kind of like to dissect it because I like to watch and see when they switch. So like, they'll be like here and it's like they're talking like this. And then all of a sudden, like, it changes and they're like looking like this, right? And I go back and like, she's got like one hair out of place. And I'm like, okay, let's see if it goes back. So when it switches, then her hair's like back to the, I'm like, how did that happen? Like, and you just keep watching. Okay, so like, okay, so when they're drinking water, like you see the cup of water sitting there and there's nothing in it. And then all of a sudden it's full. And you're like, oh, they have a full cup of water now. And it goes back and it's like half full. And then it's full again. You're like, something's messed up. Like, you would think out of all the attention to detail that they pay on all of their face and everything, that they'd pay attention to the cup, right? But the thing is, they don't care that the cup has enough water in it every time they reshoot the scene because they're wanting you to focus on this, not the stuff that's around you. They don't care about this stuff. There's an illusionist that'll say, if I can get your brain to focus on one part of just this one little part, the rest of it is perfect. It doesn't matter what's going on over here. All of this stuff can be messed up all around you. And if you're focused on this one part, you won't ever see this stuff messed up. Can I rock your world right here now? You ready? If you focus on God right here, you don't have to worry about all this stuff over here that's messed up. Your focus on God is what keeps you over here to not worry about this stuff that's messed up. But you have to focus on God first. Does that make sense? All right, let me bring this up a little different way. How many basketball fans do we have in here? Okay. Tomorrow morning starts probably the best 2.5 weeks of the year. It is the NCAA tournament starts tomorrow, March Madness. There's like 12 games on 10 different, I know it makes no sense, like there's 10 different channels that are watching this, and like 15 different games going at once, and you're like watching, you're going, which game do I watch, right? My brother goes to this place in Las Vegas. He's gone for, I think, like 4 years, and it's called the War Room. And what they do is they go and sit inside a room that's about the size of our church sanctuary, and they have flat screen projectors all around the whole room. And they sit there, and they literally sit there and watch every game on the TV. And I'm like, I want to go one time. Please let me go. All he has to do is pay to get there. His hotel is taken care of. His time out there is done. His food there is taken care of. Everything. All he has to do is pay to get there. So he winds up getting like the cheapest flights he can get, gets on there, goes, and does it. He's there the whole weekend watching as these games are going on. I just want to go once. So if anybody wants to help me get there, I just want to go one time, okay? So 68 teams starting out the NCAA tournament for one goal, a national championship. 68 teams. Now, within those 68 teams, there's what? There's underdogs. There's teams that should win. Teams that may not win. There's the team that you look and you're like, if that team loses, there's a problem. What happens? Those are called what? Those games where those teams that are supposed to lose, it's called an upset. It's also called a bracket buster, right? That's the one that when all of a sudden Duke loses for no apparent reason at all, like you just go, that's it. There's my bracket, and I'm throwing it out the window, right? See, here's what I do. I take my bracket, and this is my bracket already filled out. If anybody wants to know, I do have Duke winning the national championship just because I don't want to see Tennessee win. So Duke winning the national championship, here's what will happen. I'm going to tell you right now. If Duke loses tomorrow, if they lose tomorrow, you know what will happen to this bracket? I tear it up. I tear it up, and I go like this, and I go, bye-bye, bracket. We'll see you later. And I throw it over here, and I say, forget it, because I don't care anymore. Because why? Because it don't matter now. I ain't got a perfect bracket. I ain't going to win anything, and I don't bet on it. I just say it'd be fun to see how many I can win, and my wife hates it because I have two different color highlighters. I'll bring like a yellow highlighter and an orange one. The yellow one, that team won. The orange one, you lost, and every game that you had to be, I'm like, dang it, yellow and yellow and yellow and yellow. It's like, oh, man, like trying to figure out what the best way to do it is, right? Now, somebody remind me to pick that up and fix the pieces because now I'm going to have to refill that out because I need that for tomorrow. But 68 teams, one goal, national championship. What would happen if Duke lost their focus in the first game? What would happen if they went and played Northeast South Dakota or something like that, something crazy? What would happen if they would all of a sudden lose their focus and wind up losing the game against that team? There would be a whole bunch of mad folks, right? I bet their coach would be like, you all just lost your scholarship. Every one of you, you're done. It's over, right? Like, you're done. I'm done. I'm just quitting right now because we lost. So let me ask you this question. Anybody know of a upset in the Bible? That's the perfect one because that's the ones in my notes. Thank you very much. David and Goliath. Here we have a guy, Goliath, humongous, this little bitty dude, David, and his job is to go out and kill Goliath. That's his job. So he's going to go out, pick up a rock, take his little slingshot, and he's going to take it and he's going to throw that rock and hit Goliath and knock him down and kill him. Now, here's a question. What would happen if David, little 5 foot nothing, about 110 pounds soaking wet, hey, it's my story, I can tell it how I want, goes and picks up that rock and he takes that slingshot and he starts to go like this and turn that slingshot and all of a sudden he goes, holy cow, that guy's huge. If his hand, while he's moving that slingshot, doesn't keep moving, and all of a sudden it stops, and that rock comes back and hits him in the head because he lost his focus for a moment, all of a sudden that story is completely different. I'm not 100% sure that it would not even be in there if the dude lost his focus and hits himself in the head and knocks himself out. Goliath would be like, that was easy. I can just go step on that dude. He's done. Like, he's done, right? But what happens is he focuses, David focuses not on the size of Goliath, but he focuses on who God is to him. He does that because, number one, he has a relationship with God. You can't not have a relationship with God and then try to trust him when the stuff in the battle comes your way. You have to trust him enough and say, you know what, God, I have a relationship with you that when this giant comes in front of me, I'm going to stop and I'm going to try to look at you. Instead of looking at the giant, I'm going to look at you. I'm going to keep my focus, and I'm going to look right at you, and I'm going to say, okay, God, here's my focus. I'm looking at you. I know that guy's huge. I know you've done something, and I know you're going to do something for me. I know you're going to help me through this, and all of a sudden, your hand starts moving, and you're like, God, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm still looking at you. God, I see my hand, and it's moving, and if I move my hand one more time, and I don't let go of this, my arm might fall off, but I'm going to do it. And I just keep spinning, and all of a sudden, God says, let go, and you just throw that rock, and you hit the giant, and you knock him down. See, here's the thing. Sometimes we think all we have to do is knock the giant down. So one thing to knock the giant down, it's another thing to kill him. It's one thing to knock the giant down and get him down on the ground to your size. It's another thing to go over there and do what David did, which was pick up the sword and cut his head off. Because when you cut the head off, you cut off the thing that makes him think. You cut off the thing that is making him be so big. You cut off his mouth where he can't talk to you anymore. Somebody in this room needs to know that the giant that's in front of them, you need to knock it down. But when you knock it down, you need to go by and knock its head off too, so that way it doesn't talk to you anymore and you don't hear what it's telling you anymore. That's really good preaching, and nobody said nothing. I'm just saying, listen when I tell you this tonight. If you don't go by and take his head off and all you do is knock him down, all you've done is give him a headache. And he's going to come back at you. Probably madder than he was. David went by and he took his sword and he cut the head off of the giant. But I want you to understand one thing he did after that. What did he do after he cut his head off? He paraded around with the head of the giant like a trophy. He literally, this dude goes by. He swings this sling, he knocks his head, hits the guy in the head with a rock, knocks him to the ground, goes by, takes his sword, slices his head off, and then for the next several days, walks by and goes, look what I did. Look what God did through me. He let me defeat the giant. Look at his head. I got it sitting right here. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't want none of y'all's head to walk around with if I knock you out. Okay? I'm just saying. By the time I start seeing somebody else, I'll be like, somebody take this head because I really don't want it. It stinks. It's huge. His eyes are looking at me all the time. I don't want it. But here's what I want you to see. He wore it. He took it around and he held on to it as a sign of honor to say, look what God did. God helped me defeat that giant. And he didn't just say, I did it. He said, look what God did. I was just the vessel that he used. I'll give you another story. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1 says this. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. I want you to understand what happens when they're talking about this. Back in the days that the Bible was written at those times, they had kings. And each king had a robe that he would wear. And he would wear that robe and it would just barely touch the ground, just barely. It would touch the ground when he walked, you could just see it barely touch the ground. If that robe just barely touched the ground, he was a new king who had just either one, taken over, or two, had never fought a battle before. Okay? Now, when battle time came and somebody was trying to come against him, his people would go out. The other king's people would go out and they would fight each other. And at the end of the fight, whoever won was the one whose king died. So if the king was to die, They would kill the king, and they would come up to the back of the king, and they would take his robe, and they would cut it off right around the shoulders. And they would take the robe from that king, and they would give it to the king who won the battle. Now, that king probably never touched a sword, never ran out on the field, but he got the robe of that other king. And what they would do is they would take that robe and they would sew it to the bottom of the existing robe that they had on. So now here's what I want you to see. You have a guy, my height, his robe, here it is right here. They cut it off, and then they take it and sew it on to the other one. So the robe that is this long becomes this long. Make sense? So after they do that, every time they win a fight, this happens. So this guy's got his material on, then he's got another material on, and if he had beaten a king who had a robe that had multiple robes on it, he got all of those robes too. So I want you to understand just where we're at, okay? If Lauren goes to fight a battle against Tucker, but Tucker has beat Jack and Cameron and Gabe, he's got a robe that is this long, and Lauren goes and she beats him, she not only beats Tucker, but in everybody else's eyes, she's beaten Tucker, she's beaten Jack, she's beaten Cameron, and she's beaten Gabe. Here's what I want you to understand. When the Bible says that they saw his robe and it had filled the temple, Jesus' robe, the Lord's robe, didn't just come down to the floor. It filled the temple, which means it was so big that it had defeated everything that you could come in contact with. Alcohol, it's on there. Drugs, it's on there. Pornography, it's on there. Lust, it's on there. Hatred, it's on there. Every sin, everything that you could think of, it's on his robe. And it continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Because why? Because we're seeing something new when they see that robe. It's like, almost like, sounds really funny, it's almost like Rapunzel's hair. It just keeps going. You just keep bringing it out, right? She just keeps playing with it, trying to get it out. She just can't get it. It just continues to go. His robe fills the temple. Here's what I want you to see tonight. You can't do anything by yourself without God. It's pointless. You try to do it, it's like, oh, look what I did. And then all of a sudden you find out, I just really screwed that up. But if you look and you say, God, I need your help. I need you to help me. What does the Bible say? The Bible says, with God, all things are possible. You can do everything with God because all things are possible. But you have to stay focused on him. Your focus has to be on God. I told you two stories tonight. Two stories that are about victory. But about having to stay focused is the biggest part. David had to stay focused. If he didn't stay focused on what was going to happen, he would have probably gotten killed. He wouldn't have become king if he wasn't focused that God could do it. It wasn't me doing it, it was God doing it. So I'm going to ask you an honest question. I'm not going to ask anybody to put their head down. I'm not going to ask anybody to close their eyes because I want you to see your peers when I ask this question. How many of you have fought a battle that you said, I couldn't have gotten over it if it wasn't for God helping me? Raise your hand if that's you. I want you to look around the room for a second. There are people in this room that have had to stay focused on God in order to get through the battle that they were going through. You guys can put your hand down. I'm going to be honest. How many people right now you could say, there's a battle going on right now, and I need God to help me. I need to stay focused. All right. You ready for this? Can I give you one more story? And we're going to get real for just about 2 minutes. One more story, and we're going to get real. 1974. None of you were born. Maybe Rob was born. I don't know. Rob's the oldest one in the room. Joseph wasn't even born in 1974. 1974. There's a team called the UCLA Bruins. Anybody know who UCLA is? Okay. There's also a team called the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Anybody know who the Notre Dame Fighting Irish are? All right. Notre Dame is not known for basketball. They are known for football. They're known for those sparkly gold helmets, right? A packed out field. Notre Dame is going to play UCLA at UCLA in basketball in 1974. Do you know when the last time that UCLA had lost was? 1971, three seasons ago. Guess who beat them? Notre Dame. Notre Dame beats UCLA in 1971. After that, UCLA goes on to have the biggest winning streak in college basketball history, three seasons without a loss. Three. 1974, UCLA getting ready to play Notre Dame. Notre Dame's coach, Digger Phelps, if you are a basketball NCAA fan, you know that Digger Phelps is now a broadcaster. Digger Phelps goes in to Notre Dame, into his office, sits down, looks at his schedule, and goes, this week we play UCLA. This week we play the best team in the country this week. And he sits down at his desk, and he goes, there ain't no way that Notre Dame beats UCLA. The coach had already, before the game even started, lost his focus. He wasn't focused on the fact that they could win. He wasn't focused on the fact that he's got good players. He wasn't focused on the fact that maybe for some odd reason, UCLA had 17 guys on their team that just had an off week. He wasn't focused on that. He was focused on the fact we're going to go to UCLA and get whooped. At the beginning of the week, Notre Dame, 30-point underdogs. 30 points. You are going into UCLA, and the media and the sports people are projecting for you to lose by at least 30 points. At 30 points, UCLA puts their C team in. Not their B team, their C team. These are the guys that are either A, really skinny and really can't play basketball, but mom and dad got them at the school. Or they're the big guys like me who really can't play, but, you know, hey, we'll let you shoot around for a while. The C team, those guys aren't going to NBA for a scholarship. They're not going to NBA to go and be number one draft pick. That's how it is, right? 30-point underdogs. Coach Phelps is in the office, and he looks, and he says, something's got to change. He looks over at a picture in his office. A picture in his office was from 1971. 3 years earlier, he saw this picture. And he says, you know what? He said, today, I'm going to choose to look at this different. He looks to adjust his focus to the fact that we could win if we work hard enough. If we put our minds to it, we could win. If we get together and say, I'm going to do this, we could win. So he goes into practice the first day. They do their practice. Here they are, practicing hard. And coach walks up and he goes, all right, I want everybody to come here. He brings everybody to half court. All of a sudden, he sees the assistant coach walking onto the court with a ladder in his hand. He walks up with the ladder and he sets it underneath the basket. And in his pocket, coach has a pair of scissors in his hand. Pulls them out of his pocket, gives them in his hand, and he says this. He says, who believes that we could go and beat UCLA at home without having a problem? Who believes we could do it? Not a single one of them even looked. They all started kind of making fun of the coach, like, yeah, right. One kid kind of looked at coach a little different. Coach looked at me, goes, come here. Points to him, one of the forwards on the team. Points to him and he goes, I want you to go down there. I want you to cut that net down. And I want you to take it with you when you go to UCLA. Now, when you go cut down the net, you don't just go up there and just be like, oh, I'm cutting down the net. Grab the scissors and snip it off. There's a reason why you cut down the net. Just like when David beat Goliath and he cut his head off and he walked around with it, you cut the net off because you did something that was completely unexpected. You cut the net down because you went in and you beat somebody that you weren't supposed to beat. And that's an honor to walk in and say, you know what, we just beat them. We're cutting the net down to remember this day. It's their trophy for that day. You're not going to get a trophy in everything you do. But sometimes when you get a victory and all of a sudden you go, I need something to remember this by, you go by and cut the net down. I've seen lacrosse teams cutting nets down when they win. That's sad right there. Lacrosse winning and cutting nets down. Crazy. He hands him a pair of scissors. He goes up and he cuts the net down and he walks away. His attitude is completely different. All of his friends making fun of him. The next day, practice comes like normal. The ladder's still sitting there in the corner of the room. Coach walks out and he goes, who thinks we could beat UCLA on Saturday? He has the scissors like this and he hands them to another player. Another forward does that on Monday, does it on Tuesday. Wednesday comes, he does the same thing. Thursday comes, he does the same thing. Friday comes, everybody has had a chance on the starting lineup to cut down the nets except for the captain of the team, the center, the tallest guy. He doesn't even have to get up on the ladder to touch the net. He's just like, you know, here's a huge guy, right? So he walks up, getting ready to get to the end of practice. He knows what's coming. Coach calls all the guys together. The ladder is still sitting in the corner. And all of a sudden, the runt, the third guy down the list, right? He's on the C team, maybe on the D team. He just goes and practices, but he doesn't get a chance to play ever. Runs up, grabs the ladder, hooks it up, takes the scissors, cuts the net down, and runs like a girl to the other side of the room and changes clothes and gets out of there before anybody gets to him. Because he knows I'm about to get my butt beat by A team, B team, and C team. They're about to come after me. And the center, the captain, the biggest guy on the floor, is ticked. He is mad. He's mad because now you just took my net. That's my net. And he's over there yelling at the coach. Mad. He took my net. He took what was mine. He's like, I'm going after him. And the coach looked at him and said, stop. What is your problem? And he said, he took what it was rightfully mine. And he looked at me and goes, if you want a net so bad, go beat UCLA tomorrow night. Basketball player walks off, frustrated, mad, doesn't know what he's going to do. flash forward really quickly. Fast forward to Saturday night. Saturday night comes. Notre Dame at UCLA. The first half, they're down 17 points. 17 points in the first half. You go back in the locker room, down 17 points. Every guy in there has a net, and here's the center going, great. We're down 17 points. I'm not going to get it. He starts to do what? He starts to lose the focus a little bit. Coach does his most inspirational speech. They go back out. 3 minutes and 33 seconds left in the game. Coach calls a timeout. They're down 11. Now, I'm going to say, if you're down 17 in the first half and you're only down 11 in the second half, you got a good second half. But that's not enough to win you the game. You're still down 11. Coach calls a timeout. Somebody say timeout. Somebody say readjust your focus. Coach looks at them. He gets them all on the bench, and he says this. He says, if you have any doubt right now, if any one person has any doubt right now that you are going to lose this game, get off the bench and go to the locker room. And he sits there and he waits. Not a single person moved. And he says this. He goes, then let's go and beat UCLA. They're over there. They think they've already won. You're up 11. They think that's over. Go and beat them now. They get back on the court. As soon as they get back on the court, they score 12 unanswered points. 3 minutes and 33 seconds, you're down by 11. They go back, they score 12 unanswered points, and Notre Dame beats UCLA at home, beats the best winning streak in college basketball, a team that's undefeated the last 3 years. Notre Dame goes in and beats them. They had to adjust their focus. They put their focus where it was supposed to be. The center walks up, goes up, and he grabs the ladder, grabs the scissors, and starts to cut down the net. Every player taking a piece of the net. We beat UCLA. Clip. I had a hand in this. Clip. I might not have scored 100 points tonight, but I had a hand in that. Clip. And it got to the end, and they take their piece, they cut it off, and then they hold it up like a victory statement and say, look what we did. I want you to understand something, though. When they cut that off, the only way for that to go back is for everybody to go back and put their pieces together again. You're not going to be able to sew it back together because it's already clipped. But you show that I was part of the team when you put those pieces back and show where you've clipped them off. So tonight I'm going to ask you a question. I've asked you once already, and for the next couple minutes, I don't want anybody moving around. Who's gone through the battle? Who's gone through the battle and you say, without God's help and having my focus on Him, without it, I'd have never been able to beat it. But I beat the battle because I focused on God. At the very end of the time when everybody's gone, sometimes they'll cut down just one side, sometimes they'll cut down both nets. They leave one side hanging, one cut left to hang. And they give the scissors to the one person who kept their focus the most the whole time. And that was the coach. The coach will cut it off. He'll do two things. He's got two pieces in his hand. This one's falling off and this one here. He takes this one and he puts it in his pocket so that he can remember it. And then he plays David a little bit. He He takes it and he goes like this. And he gets all excited and he starts waving it. And he starts doing this. And he takes that and he puts it somewhere where his team, when they see it, will remember it. Where the people that come in after, if they have no clue what the message was about, how they did it or anything, they see that net and they'll go, something happened with that net. There was something important that happened that day. Tonight I'm going to tell you, God has done something in you. God has put you in a place where you understand one thing. I'm always back here looking to you and going, you can do it. Stay focused. You can succeed. Stay focused. Youth leaders are here. We're pushing you. You can do it. Stay focused. When you come off focus, what do? We try to push you back in to get you focused again. I want you to see one thing. This net will go somewhere in this room for you to understand and for you to see it. And when you get somebody who comes in and they look at you and go, what's up with the net hanging around? You can look at them and say, it's my reminder to stay focused. That's my reminder when I'm here, what God's done, and to stay focused. When you take it home, remind you, stay focused. Is there anybody that didn't get a chance to cut that wants to before we go? All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pray, and we're going to get released. Keep your focus. Stay focused on God. It doesn't matter if you're here or you're somewhere else. Stay focused on God. Logan, I don't know if this is the only time I'm going to get to see you. I don't know if this is the only time I'm going to get to speak to you, but stay focused. Let's pray. God, I just thank you for these kids, God. I thank you for these teenagers, these students. God, I ask you, God, that right now, in the midst of everything going on around them, that they would stay focused on you. God, that they would take these pieces of this net that they have and they would take it, they would put it somewhere so they can be reminded of the victories that you brought them through, reminded of the things that you've done in them, and God, remind them to stay focused on you so that with you they can win the battle. God, I thank you, God, for the opportunity that I've had to speak tonight. God, I ask that we don't leave here the same way we came in. God, that we leave here different and changed. And we give you the praise and the honor and the glory. In your name we all pray. And everybody says, amen.